Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Simon Phipps joins me. We're going to be talking about all things open, an amazing open source conference. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps, episode 534, recorded June 19th, 2019. All things open 2019. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I'm your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEngine.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it, projects you may want to download right after this show, or occasionally we don't talk about any of those things. We talk about conferences, as we are doing today. Joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host, Simon. Welcome back to the show.
Why, thank you, Randall. It's a pleasure to be back on the show again. I apologize for the slightly gravelly voice. I picked up a cold while I was on the train traveling back from Paris the other day and haven't been able to shake it off in the kind of gray, rainy, stereotypical English weather that I'm in at the moment here in Southampton.
Cool. And I'm normally taping at what we call 9:30 a.m. Leo time, because Leo time is the only time that matters. But I'm actually on the East Coast today. I am, ironically, we're going to be talking about a conference. I'll talk about that in a few minutes. But I am at the Pearl Conference for this week in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I was thinking, is it Philadelphia? No, it's Pittsburgh. It gets blurry after the third day of the conference, so I'm a little crazy there. I'm in the AV room. They actually gave me a hard line right into their router. And so this was the only place I could get this. Otherwise, I'd be on the conference Wi-Fi, which is flaky, or my hotel Wi-Fi, which would be more flaky. So I appreciate this, but it might mean from time to time you hear like people talking in the background and stuff. But thanks to inverse square law, we're probably not going to hear that too much. Mike's facing me over here, and it's sort of away from the door and away from the equipment over that way. So I think I'm probably going to be okay. So today's show is a repeat guest, only two times so far now, Todd Lewis, who is the chair and creator of All Things Open. All Things Open is a huge conference that happens every October-ish, I guess. Yes, October, mid-October, in Raleigh, North Carolina, which is the home of Red Hat and a bunch of other things, so it's really convenient. And when I went 2 years ago, there were about 3,000 attendees, but I hear that number's been getting bigger. So we'll be asking Todd about what's happened in the last couple of years, what's happened in the 10 years of its existence, anything new and unusual coming up in this show. You don't have to have listened to the last show. I did yesterday just to make sure I covered the same stuff. But this is a standalone show, so we'll tell you everything there is to know about All Things Open today. Simon, what do you know about this show?
I know almost nothing about it. This is not a conference I've ever been to because it's a long way from home. And since it was started, I have not worked for a corporation that pays for my travel to random conferences. So I don't know a huge amount about it. I'm fascinated by the fact they've become a B Corp. I've just been looking around on their website, and I've not been able to find any particulars about the ownership of the company and the conference. So I'd like to dig into that and find out why they aren't disclosing it. And generally, I want to find out about this huge event that I've never been to.
Yeah, well, I was pretty surprised by it a couple of years ago, and I've been going ever since. I'll be there again this year. You know, why don't we bring Todd on, and then we can talk to him about this?
Yeah, that sounds good. Let's do that.
Welcome back, Todd.
Thank you. Thanks, Randall.
Cool. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm actually in Raleigh. I'm in downtown Raleigh at a co-work space called HQ Raleigh.
Cool. All right. Well, so give us the big picture. What is All Things Open? What is it trying to cover? And maybe if you want to include that also, how did it get started?
Sure. Painting, broad strokes here. It's a polyglot technology conference that really focuses on open source. So open, open being the key word, the real focus. It's in, open source, open tech, and the open web. Started it. This will be our seventh year, year seven. So the first year was 2013. It's a multi-track conference. So over both days of the event, there will be maybe 20 tracks of content going on. So attendees can get, you know, something of pretty much everything open source related. That's kind of the idea. That's where, you know, the polyglot idea sort of comes in. And again, the attendance continues to increase. In 2013, the attendance was 600 or 700, something like that. And over the next 6 years, now hitting into year seven, that number is now 4,000 plus. So we're really fortunate.
Wow.
Some things have kind of worked in our favor, you know, and I would like to think we've done a few things right. I know we've done a lot of things wrong, but that's the way life works, right? You make some mistakes and then you learn from them. So I'd like to think that the attendance figures and the general response is verification that we've certainly made the mistakes, but we've learned from them, and we are now doing some things a little bit better.
Well, I have to say, from the previous 2 years that I've attended, that unlike many conferences I go to, even with that many tracks, there was never a time slot where there wasn't something for me to see. And so I was actually exhausted after the conference because I was in every single session every time. And in fact, for some of the hours, there were at least three or four things across that I wanted to see all at once. I think that's the right problem to have, right?
Well, that's certainly the goal. I think as an organizer, you know, you want to organize something that includes sessions that are appealing to pretty much everyone. And, you know, I guess what you want to avoid is a situation in which your attendees are looking around saying, nothing appeals to me. You know, there's not a single session that I really want to go to. So as a result, I'll just, you know, pop out in the lobby and I'll get some work done until something happens that I am interested in, and which is later in the day. So I'm really happy to hear that you were exhausted by the end of the day because there was so much content that you wanted to go to and wanted to attend. It's probably the single biggest complaint we get about the show is that there are some conflicting sessions from an interest standpoint. People really are interested in sessions going on at the same time. There's some overlap. And in the past, we haven't really repeated sessions. It's something we've talked about. You know, do you maybe repeat sessions that you think, you know, are around popular topics or ones that you think going in a lot of people are going to be interested in? Maybe put one early in the day, one later in the day to give people two opportunities to attend that particular session. Not something we've done, certainly something we've discussed, because we do hear that a lot, that, hey, Todd, there, you know, I really wanted to attend this, but it's conflicting with these other three sessions that I really want to go to too. Yeah. So how do I make a decision? There's a part of me that's very happy when I hear that. I don't want anybody to be upset or conflicted, but at the same time, as an organizer, I think that's certainly a goal. You know, you've done a decent job when you have people wanting to attend multiple sessions at the same time.
But given the shortage of speaker space, which I know because I was rejected this year. repeating a session Repeating a session is just going to eat up one more slot, right?
Yeah, it does. It does. And, you know, too, I mean, you know, going in, there's only so much information you can gather going in. So, you know, you schedule sessions that you think are going to be really popular. They're on topics that are of interest. And of course, we're consistently reading. We read articles. We, you know, talk to people. We have talk review committees. We're constantly seeking input on what is of interest, what topics are on people's minds, what do we think they're going to find value in. But, you know, there are some surprises. So, you know, we have scheduled, put talks in slots that we thought were, you know, key slots, prime locations, prime real estate, if you will. And while some of them do very, very well from an attendance session, some of them don't do so well. So we were, you know, we sort of got that wrong. And sometimes that can be a very difficult thing to predict. So, you know, you just do the best you can and really try to choose topics that are going to be of interest. But you're exactly right. I mean, you know, we had a good number of people submit talks this year. And even though we do have a number of slots available, there will be more than 200 talks that are featured over both days of the event this year. You know, it's wow. Surprisingly limited. So you're exactly right. If we were to feature a talk twice, we would be taking a slot away from another topic and from another speaker.
And this is at the Raleigh Convention Center?
It is. Yeah. We've hosted the event at the Convention Center every year. Again, this will be year 7, and we're back at the Convention Center. The co-work space that I'm working out of is about a block away from the Convention Center. I was just there yesterday. We were doing walkthroughs and prepping for the event in October. We're 4.5 months away, but in conference world, 4.5 months is the same as saying 2 weeks. It certainly feels that way, at least.
You're on the final countdown already. You probably got clocks that count down from 4.5 months to zero. And as I recall, I think 2 years ago when I went, you'd already used up the entire convention center, so you really have no room to expand.
Yeah, you know, that's something. We talk to the convention center every year about expanding, and as nice as they are, to this point, they've refused to expand just for us. They like us. We're nice people, but they politely decline when we ask them to build on a new wing for us. They, you know, thank you, but no thanks. But all that being said, that's a really good point. This year, something that we are doing a little bit different is that we are expanding into an adjoining space. It's at a hotel, so we are going to be able to, offer a few extended workshops and do some extended sessions, maybe a few more than we've been able to do in the past, by working a little more closely with the adjoining hotel and utilizing some of their meeting space as well. So that is something that's new. That's been a workaround, if you will, to the situation of sort of running out of space at the convention center itself.
And, you know, Simon's chomping at the bit to get some questions here, but I just want to get some of the logistics out. So what are the days of the conference?
Yeah, October the 13th through the 15th. That's Sunday through Tuesday. Sunday, we offer a half a day programming. Our programming on Sunday focuses on inclusion and diversity. So we really run a half day program on that topic. Last year was our first year doing that, and we're certainly repeating it. It was very successful. Last year, maybe 400 to 500 people came in from really around the world for that event. We had, you know, thought leaders, community leaders, corporate leaders that participated in that event. So we're going to do that again on Sunday, wow, October the 13th. And then on the 14th and 15th, those are more traditional conference days. And again, that'll be Monday and Tuesday.
So Todd, this is a fascinating conference. I grew up in my open source career on OSCON, and this kind of looks to me like kind of the East Coast OSCON, but with added Red Hat. I'm fascinated. I went looking on the website to find out who owns the conference, and I could see that it was a B Corp, but I can't find any other particulars of ownership. Can you tell me, you know, who is it that's putting this conference on?
Yeah, All Things Open is a company. So it's the All Things Open company really putting the conference on, and the company is a certified B Corp. So the company has gone through the process. We make the certified B Corporation information pretty clear, or at least I'd like to think pretty visible on the website. Now you have to scroll all the way down on the homepage there to the footer on the homepage, certainly. And it does state that we are a certified B Corp. We've gone through the certification process, and we've been audited and, you know, verified and met the minimum criteria to achieve that certification. So, you know, in and of itself, it's a company that has gone through the process of becoming a certified B Corporation.
Right. Yeah, that's why I scrolled down there and I can see it says that. There's nothing clicky down there for me to click through and find out anything more, though, which is something I'm asking.
No, that's a really good question, Simon. And, you know, honestly, we probably need to link over. You know, the organization that certifies B Corps, that actually oversees the certification process, they give you guidelines. There are templates, there are guidelines to follow that they provide. As to how you communicate the fact that you're a certified B Corp. And that logo, that verbiage in the footer of your website was one of the ways that was recommended to us. But we probably do need to link over. We've written, a pretty good blog post on this that is in our news section. It is an older blog post. We wrote it last year, maybe a year, 15 months ago, when we achieved the certification, letting everyone know that we had gone through the process, sort of explaining the justification and what that process was all about. So we probably need to link to that blog post in the footer right there along with the certification. That would be the logical thing to do. Did I mention that while we've done some things really well, there are other things that maybe we haven't done so well?
Yeah. Well, you see, here I am, a clueless foreigner who knows nothing about the event. And you kind of assume everyone who goes to your website knows what you are. And I don't. And I can't find any details about who you are.
I think that's an excellent point.
So where did this event come from? You know, I had already left working for Evil Corporate America by the time you started the conference, I think. And so it just appeared from nowhere for me. How did the event come about?
Well, I developed I've been in the tech field for more than 15 years. And I developed an interest in open source maybe 12, 13 years ago, and really began to focus on it and look at it more deeply and utilize it as well. Maybe 10, 12 years ago, in an individual capacity, started to host events, user groups, and smaller events around the topic of open source, simply to provide education, because I realized very early on, at least to me, that there was a need to provide more education around it. People had heard of it. They'd heard of Linux. Maybe they, you know, had heard of some other technologies, WordPress, you know, et cetera, that they were maybe using or that were coming online. But they really didn't understand the model. They didn't understand the methodologies. They really didn't understand the underpinning, you know, the revenue models. How do people make money on this? Why would anyone contribute? What's in this for me? What's the value proposition? What's the business case for this? They really didn't know a lot of that. There was in my opinion, there was a big need for more education in an environment that was accessible from a price point, you know, perspective. It was not overly expensive that, you know, the average person could kind of get into and learn more about the topic of open source, both on the technology side and on the methodology side. And so, you know, I really began to create events, and one thing led to another. They were, you know, successful. There were some well-known events in there, but we'd always really wanted to do something on a larger scale, and we'd wanted to do something in the Research Triangle, really in the Raleigh and the Research Triangle Park area of North Carolina. So that's kind of how All Things Open kind of came about. You know, we'd been doing events in one shape or form for about 5 years before All Things Open was created, and we really started doing the event. So again, first year was 2013. It did take place in downtown Raleigh. We were very fortunate to find, you know, a few partners that were willing to work with us to help us make it happen. And, you know, 6 years now, going on 7 years later, we're at 4,000 plus attendees.
Right. Now, I was just looking at the pricing here, and you're like 10% of the price of OSCON. How are you keeping the price so low? You don't even look like you have an exhibit hall. So how is it such a cheap event?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We've always taken the long view on this. I think with events, or really with anything, with companies in general, with anything that you sort of dive into and pursue, you can take a long view, you can take a short view. Your purpose for doing something can be, you know, you can look to, you know, maximize profit and to make money on it, and you know, choose where you're going to do the event. You can kind of establish a baseline budget and take on costs, you know, and answer some very basic questions. Will I offer lunch? Will I locate this event in a convention center? Both of those things are incredibly expensive. That immediately means your budget is going to be significant right out of the box. So we've taken more of a long view on this, and, you know, we've been willing to, you know, profit margins are limited. They are much lower than they are for most other events, because, you know, we want to be around for the long term, because we think we're providing value to the community in other ways by allowing people that may not otherwise be able to attend events to actually attend and to learn and to get the education. So, you know, it means we have to cut corners in some, and by, I don't mean, you know, there's a very negative connotation attached to cutting corners. I don't think it always has to be negative. I just think it means, you know, you've got to be smart about the way you spend money. You know, we're not as, I guess, maybe as fancy as some of the other conferences. You won't find, some of the amenities at our conference that you might find at other events. We do box lunches, you know, for lunch. People can attend, get a box lunch. We do that for a variety of reasons. I mean, it does save money, just being honest about it. But it's, box lunches are also mobile, so we do offer some programming over lunch. So we give attendees the option of kind of a mobile option for lunch. They can go into a session and catch additional programming as they're eating, if they choose to. So that kind of serves dual purposes, but that's just one example of ways that we're able to maybe cut down on some costs that maybe some other people incur. So some, you know, you have to run it frugally, in a very frugal way. And we've always made that a priority, because the end result, which is making it accessible and bringing some people into the open source movement, if you will, and educating them and getting them started and on-ramping them, was very worth it to us.
Right. Now, I see that looking at the website here, it looks to me like there is an early bird price that's valid until June 22nd. Are you going to be able to give us a code so that people who watch Floss Weekly can get the lower price a little bit longer than that?
Oh, sure. No, we're more than happy to do that. That code will just be Floss Weekly. So if you we actually use Eventbrite. They're our ticket processing third-party partner. But on Eventbrite, just as you go to we refer to as an iframe, the Eventbrite iframe and the Eventbrite page, you can certainly you'll be queued for a promo code, and you can put in a promo code Floss Weekly that will give you a discount once the $99 option expires. We don't really do any discounts. $99 is the lowest price that we offer, but then the discount codes do become active, or you can apply them once that $99 price point expires, which would start, that would happen on June the 22nd. So the discount codes would become applicable on June the 23rd.
Right. And that's when a lot of people are going to be watching the show, because, that's the weekend. So yeah, it's really great that you've made that code available. So it's Floss Weekly without a space, is that?
Without a space.
Without a space. So and all in lowercase.
Yes.
Okay. So if you go buy your tickets, people, and type in Floss Weekly in lowercase, you'll be able to get the lower price, even though you're past the early bird deadline. Thanks very much for arranging that for us, Todd. We're very grateful for that. So apart from it being cheap to attend, have you got any good keynotes? What's the show like this year?
Yeah. So the way we structure it, again, Sunday the 13th, we do focus on the topic of inclusion and diversity. We did this for the first time last year. We make that event free. It does require registration, but it is free. So that actually begins on Sunday, October the 13th. And we do that because we want as many people to attend that event as possible, because we think the topic is one worthy of learning more about, understanding the importance of inclusion and diversity. So we want to lower the barriers to entry to that particular event as much as possible, so that we never want price to be an obstacle. But for that particular event, we really don't want it to be an obstacle. So that one is free. And then on Monday, Tuesday, again, are structured, I guess, in the more traditional conference model. We'll start out the day with keynotes, both days with keynotes. We have a keynote block about an hour and a half long. And Simon, we're going through the process right now. We're choosing keynotes now. I'm not, really able to announce the keynotes at this moment. We generally do that a couple months away from the show, away from the conference, just to let people know what's coming in that keynote block. And then the remainder of both days will just be more, traditional sessions. We feature 15-minute burst talks. So there's sort of lightning talks, TED Talk style, if you will. And those are for topics, you want to touch something on something at a high level. You don't necessarily want to do a deep dive. The attendee wants to learn, something about something, but not enough to really go deeper on a topic. That's perfect. That's what the burst talks were really created for, to serve that purpose. We also do more traditional 45-minute sessions as well. And then we do extended sessions, which would be an hour and a half to 3 hours. And those sessions do allow for deeper dives on topics when it becomes necessary. So those three options, in addition to the keynotes over both days, and both traditional conference days would be October 14th, 15th, which would be Monday, Tuesday.
I just checked. If you do need a keynote, I am available on those conference days still, remarkably.
Good. Okay. Good.
So who goes to the show? Is it just people from North Carolina, from RTP, or do you draw people in from further afield than that?
Great question. Last year we had people from 40 U.S. states. So people really attended. Our goal is to get someone from every state in the United States. So we were up to 40 last year. There is a higher concentration of attendee from, the North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, that Southeast corridor. But really good representation from the East Coast in general, the East Coast of the U.S. And we're seeing the numbers, that percentage increase coming from the Midwest and then from the West Coast of the United States as well. A lot of people from Washington and from Portland and from especially from San Francisco, really good representation and attendance from those more West Coast-based tech centers. A lot of people from Austin, a lot of people from Chicago. So from those technology centers, more Midwesternly located, if you will, if that's a word. And then, you know, I think the majority still attend from the East Coast and then from that Southeast corridor. And people from 24 countries attended last year also. So I think over the last 6 years, going into year seven, it has become more of an international event as well. Our international representation has increased. And last year, it really took a giant leap forward. And again, people from 24 different countries were on the ground at All Things Open. So we consider that an improvement. We're going in the right direction. And that's something that we very much want to see increase in the years ahead. We would like to see more people from other countries attend.
Right, right. And so with the growth like this, how have you coped with running an ever larger conference? Because, I mean, I'm helping run a tiny conference here in the UK, and it's enough trouble putting that on without having an extra 1,000 people coming every year. So what are you doing here? Are you staffing up? Have you got a massive volunteer force? How does that work?
We do. Volunteers are really valuable to us. When you're on the ground, if you attend the event, you've probably met at least one, probably two, five, ten of our volunteers. They're wonderful. Many of them have been with us for multiple years. So we couldn't do the event without volunteers. They're just world-class people. Not only they're just good human beings, they're willing, again, to take their time. Everyone has limited time. Time is limited for everyone. And they're willing to take something that they have limited, and a limited amount of, and really give that to us. So without volunteers, we really couldn't do it. They're wonderful. And again, they are out in full force and extremely important at the event itself. Leading up to the event, we have a very small team. There may be, three of us, two and a half to three of us that really consistently work on the event. We love what we do. We spend a lot of time on this. Because you're exactly right. As more people attend, the number of variables that you have to work with, the number of variables in the equation increase accordingly. And the greater the number of variables that you're dealing with and having to pay attention to and address, the harder it becomes, the more time it takes. There's just no way around that. So we spend a lot of time. I work a lot. I really enjoy what I do. To me, this is not really work. This is pure enjoyment. Not to say there aren't trouble spots or issues that come up, or there aren't days that I don't, utter to myself, what the heck have I done? Because if I'm being honest, I have those days just like everyone else does when things aren't going quite right. But again, a very small team works very hard around the year, year round to make this happen. And then we do depend on volunteers in a very big way as well. And they are wonderful. They're great, great people.
You know, it doesn't surprise me that you say you enjoy doing this. You seem like a natural fit for running the show. I just want to say from the number of times we've interacted with you, it's been great.
Thank you, Randall. That's really nice. I just like people, and I know that that's such a cliche and that's so overdone. So I don't mean to, cause the collective eye roll out there in your community. Like, really? Wow, great, Todd. You like people. That's news. Thanks for making news for us. But I genuinely like people, and I want to help people. And I just think a conference, especially a technology conference where education and networking are the focus, it is, a few better ways that you can help people learn more, become more marketable, maybe get a job, introduce them to someone, enable them to make a connection that results in a job that enables them to better feed their family and improves their personal network and, grows that. I mean, I view this as an opportunity to truly help people. And as cliched as that might sound, I think we take that very seriously. I was raised that way. My mom, without getting too personal, my mom, I grew up watching my mom truly help people. She dedicated her life to helping people in the classroom. She worked with, a lot of kids with learning disabilities. And she worked with the elderly. She gave her time in so many ways. And I watched her make such a big impact growing up. And, you know, that has just never left me. So I thought, you know, I have a natural interest in technology. I really want to go in this direction. I enjoy the tech side of it, but I really enjoy the people side of it. And first and foremost, even over and above that, how can you help people? How can you truly help other human beings? And I think conferences are just wonderful ways to do it. So thank you.
Yes.
And just very, very
kind. You're welcome. You're welcome. Absolutely. I actually have a couple of things I noticed. I attend conferences all over the world all the time. I'm at one right now. So it's like the irony of this, and I'm calling you from the Pearl Conference today. Two unusual things I noticed about this conference. One, although the exhibit hall came up earlier in the conversation, you don't have an exhibit hall. You have exhibit halls. You want to explain that?
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's been something we sort of focused on from the very beginning. So, you know, I've been to a lot of events as well, and they have kind of a standalone exhibit hall. And what I have found, what, you know, and again, this is not the case. This is not meant as kind of a blanket comprehensive statement with no exceptions. So I just want to preface what I'm about to say with that. But all that said is that I found when you have a standalone exhibit hall, you often have to heavily incentivize attendees to visit the exhibit hall. And that's okay, whether that's food, whether that's giveaways or prizes or however an organizer might do that, that's perfectly okay. I have great respect for anyone doing this because this is really hard to do well. It's just a difficult thing to do because of the number of variables. So, but we wanted to do things a little bit differently. We actually put our exhibit spaces out by the breakout rooms, out in the actual conference center itself, so that attendees are consistently walking by tables and visiting with sponsors throughout the day. So there's not sort of a, you know, a schedule, say between 10 and 12 and 2 and 5, that the exhibit hall is technically open. And I'm using air quotes there as, you know, being open. We just wanted to do it a little bit differently and really encourage interaction and engagement with our sponsors and with our partners. And I can tell you, while, you know, there are drawbacks, nothing works perfectly well, and I'm not even going to pretend that it does. I think overwhelmingly that has worked very well, and our sponsors love it. They love the constant interaction. You know, our attendees generally seem to like it. I think by the time they leave the show, they have met with or interacted with in some way with all of our exhibitors, whether they be paying sponsors or partners or maybe an underrepresented group. We often, you know, we'll have underrepresented groups. We give them exhibit tables at our events so that they can recruit sponsors and mentors and volunteers and things like that in the technology community. But by the time an attendee is left because of that setup, they have met with just about everybody. So in our opinion, it's a win-win. Our attendees get to meet with everyone, get to learn about all the opportunities that are out there that are available, whether they be products or services or whether they just be volunteer opportunities or mentorship opportunities. And then our exhibitors are very happy because they've met with about everyone that has attended the show, and that very rarely happens. Generally speaking, that almost never happens. So again, we chose that setup to address that issue, and we just happen to view that, again, maybe we could do it a little better, maybe we could improve on that, maybe we could better serve both sides of that equation, and so far it's worked out very well for us.
And about the only downside I've seen to that is that the for a very popular vendor or sponsor, the hallway gets a little narrowed through there, and I tell you, people moving is probably your biggest issue as you get bigger and bigger. So that's the only thing I've seen bad on that. But one of the advantages is that, okay, I need to get to this room for this next talk. And as I'm doing that, I'm walking by maybe three or four vendors I haven't seen yet. And so I then make a note and say, I got to go back and see those guys. And so I'm crazy at conferences in that when the exhibit hall opens, I go in and I have to plan the route back and forth to make sure I see everybody. And that gets really annoying. And again, with a busy booth, it crushes across the hallway. And now everybody's wearing backpacks, so you get into this sort of backpack mess where you can't get through. So I really like that. I really like that about this show, and I think it's innovative. I haven't seen it anywhere else. Although Simon's whispering in my ear that that's also happens other places, but I'll let him ask that of you.
Sure.
The other thing I like about this conference that is really amazing and again very innovative is that if you apply to be a speaker and you're one of the 4 out of 5 that gets rejected, you still give them a free pass to the show. That is totally unusual.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, we've been speakers ourselves, and I've written abstracts, and I've applied to be a speaker, and I've responded to CFPs, and I've spoken at events. And, you know, I've hosted personally enough speakers over the last 10 to 15 years to know personally and through other people that, you know, abstracts, generally speaking, overwhelmingly, a lot of thought and effort goes into structuring and constructing and writing an abstract and a talk title. It's not, you know, now again, there are exceptions to this. I've seen a few that I think maybe 2 or 3 minutes went in, you know, a thought went into it, maybe not even that much. There are exceptions, but generally speaking, people really put a lot of thought and effort and time and consideration into writing abstracts. And we just don't take that for granted. We feel like we owe it to someone that has expressed an interest in the event. They've recognized and acknowledged that the event exists. They've then taken the next step to do the research on, well, what are they looking for? What are the parameters around the CFP? Let me get more information. Then let me look at my calendar and let me, you know, kind of compare that event to other events that I might submit CFPs to or a CFP response to. And then they then will take the next step and actually choose our conference to submit a talk to. And then they'll take the next step and they'll write, think of a thoughtful, creative title and then an abstract. And then actually, you know, identify what the attendee would walk away from if they were to attend that. So I guess, Randall, are giving everyone that is rejected, quite honestly, that is not chosen to speak, a free pass to the conference. We think it's the least we can do. I mean, we think, gosh, we should probably be doing more than just a free pass. And we've always done things like that because, you know, you're right. If I, you know, on just being honest, some of the conferences I've submitted talks to, if I were to get an email back and someone were to say, we really appreciate you taking the time to do this, and we so appreciate it. Even though you're not speaking, come to the show, try it out, see it for yourself. If you're a first timer, and even if you're not a first timer, even if this is your 10th year, come visit us. We still want to talk to you. We want to, you know, get to know you. We want to hang out with you. We want you to enjoy the content. We want to make you better. We want to deliver value to you. I can honestly say I would leave that experience very much like you did, saying, wow, that's just nice. That's kind. So I don't know, without beating it, you know, beating the horse here anymore. We just think so much time and effort goes into it. You know, and because we've done it ourselves, we really grasp how much time and effort goes into it. It's the least we can do. We've always done it that way. We'll always do it that way because to us, it's just the right thing to do.
So, Todd, you've been talking about a focus on education. When you talk about education, do you also consider the event as a venue for handling some of the big issues that face the open source community? Or are you simply talking about basic education about open source, about how to contribute?
Ooh, Simon, ooh. You know, we consider it all of the above. Now, you know, it's funny. This alone could be the topic of a podcast. And I would, you know, this one question alone, because this one goes deep. Choosing topics, choosing what you want to focus on, you know, well, what goes into that process? What goes into the thought process? We don't, you know, we've always been very upfront, and we respect, you know, everyone. We expect people to, when you're at the conference, to respect viewpoints and human beings on a personal level. And, you know, we do choose, you know, this year, I'll give you a great example. You know, we focus on technology for sure. We have technology specific tracks that you can learn more about specific technologies and platforms and applications and operating systems, et cetera, et cetera. Then you can learn a lot about methodologies. And to us, the way I define a methodology is, you know, contributing, making your first contribution to an open source project. How do you open source something, a tool that you might be using internally? What does that process look like? If you decide, hey, look, we want to open source something to let the outside world know that, you know, if you come to work here, you're going to work on really cool stuff. So let's open source this. Now, there are some licensing considerations. There are some, well, where do we actually post the code? What are the, you know, guidelines around that? What does the README file look like? What does the documentation around that look like? Who's going to serve as a maintainer? You know, there are a lot of questions around that one single decision that we try to provide education around at our event. So that's just an example of a methodology that we would focus on at All Things Open. So the technology and the methodologies. We also focus on other topics like inclusion, diversity. We'll feature a session at the conference this year on race and technology and open source. And, you know, it's a topic we're really interested in. It's a topic worthy of discussion. And the person delivering the talk, Dr. Rochelle Newton from Duke University, she was one of our participants last year. She was one of our speakers at our inclusion and diversity event. Wonderful woman. Does a great job, amazing background, such knowledge on this particular topic, and brings such a unique perspective to the topic that she can then make the audience aware of and deliver to the audience and then moderate discussion around this topic. So again, that's an example of it directly relates to technology, it impacts technology, it directly impacts methodologies, codes of conduct, you know, things like that. But it's also something that we make a point to focus on as well, outside of just technology specific or methodology specific. So topics like that as well. So, you know, the education is a well-rounded one. We view it as a comprehensive one. This is not just a straight up tech event. You know, community in the open source space is really important. Again, methodologies around open source technology, the technology itself is extremely important. So we try to take more of a comprehensive approach when choosing topics that we provide education around. Simon, I hope I didn't talk around your question.
Let's pin you down.
Text.
Let's pin you down a little. I think that those are all worthy topics. Mm-hmm. Every conference is struggling with them or presenting them and featuring them even. Mm-hmm. I hear a lot of discussion, grassroots open source community discussion, about the ethics of open source, about whether there's any way they can stop their work being used in things that are bad for humanity. I hear a lot of discussion from people about whether venture capitalists are good for humanity, and from the venture capitalists asking whether open source is good for profits. I think there's a lot of discussions to be had around those topics as well. Mm-hmm. Are those too controversial? Are you too much of a touchy-feely conference to do controversial things, or are you going to confront those as well?
No, we've always featured talks on, you know, business models, and business models absolutely take the impact of cloud computing on open source into consideration, because it's impacted the revenue model. So that's part of that topic being delivered. And I know cloud computing is a big topic within the field as well. So what impact is that going to have on, you know, long term on open source? That's another one that's a little controversial at the moment. So no, we don't shy away from controversial topics and talks. We want to encourage conversation and discussion around those topics. We want to encourage it to be, you know, engaged in a very respectful way. We big believers in respect and allowing that to guide the discussion, for sure. But no, as far as shying away from controversial topics, no. I mean, again, these are things that are going to be talked about. People are going to discuss them. If there's not a venue to discuss them at or in, then they're going to do them in other ways. They're going to write articles. They're going to write blog posts. They're going to, you know, they're going to find other outlets for conversations around topics just like the ones you identified. So we're not opposed to a conference being an outlet for that conversation as well. We've never really shied away from that at all.
Mm. Now, I used to visit RTP fairly often when I worked for IBM. You've got, as your sponsors, you have Red Hat and IBM, who are very much local employers. And you have a close relationship with Red Hat's infomercial site, opensource.com. Does that influence your content selection, or would you say that you're able to select content independently of that influence?
Yeah, that's a really good question. That's one we get a lot and have gotten a lot over the last really 6 to 7 years, ever since the event itself started. It really doesn't have any impact. I'm very honest, you know, because I know you ask a specific question, but, you know, with events, you know, how much is the content driven by sponsors? You know, is it pay to play or is it not pay to play, or can you pay to play, or, you know, those types of topics and questions come up all the time. And, you know, with us, we've never been really a pay to play sort of event. And it doesn't really impact talk selection and things like that. Now, are there opportunities that, you know, that we provide? Sure. You know, do we appreciate sponsors and partners? Absolutely. Without them, this wouldn't be possible. But above all else, we take our attendee into consideration. I mean, really, you know, we created All Things Open to be the event that we would want to go to. If I attended a conference and I had 10 choices, what would be the characteristics that would cause me to say, wow, that is an event I would want to go to? We sort of scratched our own itch. We sort of created something that if we saw marketed or advertised or available, we would want to go to. So at no point do we ever sacrifice the attendee experience on behalf of a partner or a sponsor or someone that we might work with on that side of things. The attendee experience, the educational value, the topic selection is always at the top of the consideration hierarchy, if you will. And that has, you know, I've had conversations with partners about that. I've always tried to be very honest about that. And I can tell you, people have been very understanding. People, you know, we've, again, very, very understanding. I think people respect that in the end. And they really, I think that's one of the reasons why the conference has grown, is that attendees don't feel that way. They don't think that that's reflected in talk selection or who's delivering talks or anything else. They feel like this is an even playing field, that everyone has a fair shot, everyone's well represented, and there aren't favorites played, if you will, and that's not, you know, reflected in con. I don't feel like I'm attending a sales pitch on behalf of a sponsor or a partner. We've never really heard that. We've never received that feedback. And I can tell you, we've worked really, really hard to prevent that from happening, because we do want to be fair to everybody. We want to be viewed as neutral territory. That's certainly a goal and always has been a goal. So partners are very important. Red Hat, as an example, they are headquartered. Their worldwide headquarters are in Raleigh. They're located maybe, you know, a few blocks from the convention center. And they've been a partner with us from the very beginning. But, you know, I mean... do they influence talk? Nothing. There is a wall of separation there, and there always has been. It is run independently of any of our sponsors or any, you know, partners or whatever title or however we might refer to them. Again, we take the attendee into consideration, and we put on an event that we would want to go to. And I can tell you from my own standpoint, my own perspective, I would not want to attend an extended sales pitch on behalf of just a couple companies. That would get old really quickly. And one, I would never go back to that event. And two, I would leave the event very early after about 2 sessions. After I figured out what was going on, I would probably leave very, very quickly afterwards. So the fact that our attendance continues to grow, people continue to come back year after year, I hope that's a reflection that we focused on it, and, you know, it is very important to us.
And I know you can't talk about this year's upcoming keynote speakers, but I can tell you and remind you of a keynote speaker I really appreciated a couple years ago, and that was what's her name, Sarah Chips, that does Jewel Bots. That was such an amazing talk. For those of you that we have a show on that, we actually got her on the show about a month after you were on. Mm-hmm. And so go back and see the Jewel Bots episode of Floss Weekly for the details. But the elevator pitch is that they have friendship bracelets that can be programmed. I think it's in JavaScript, but somehow it's like getting.
That's right.
Typically, girls only wear friendship bracelets. Oh, now I'm going to seem sexist. I'm sorry. People wear friendship bracelets. Stop that, Randall. But it was to get more women included in wanting to program at an early age. And I think she hit the market spot on. And she's been reasonably successful, I understand. In fact, they've got science kits now for people that are trying to get more people in STEM. So that's really exciting. And that was one of your keynote speakers. And I had to immediately run up to her and said, I did the show. You want to be on this show? And she said, sure. And so she was on a month later. So that's the caliber of people that you have at your keynotes, these people that are making a difference in so many different directions. And you're right. This is the kind of show I want to keep coming back to. And you're spot on that. So thank you for those kinds of keynotes.
Yeah. And, you know, last year, Sarah was two years ago. And, you know, last year we featured a speaker that on day two demonstrated earrings that were powered by Python. So they were Python powered earrings. And that was another example sort of as a continuation of the Sarah Chips, you know, topic. So but you're right, Randall. You know, keynotes are really interesting because, you know, you need to choose topics that are widely applicable and of great interest, you know. So you've got a lot of different types that attend our event because it is a polyglot event. So you do get specialists that attend. So choosing topics that appeal to a wide audience can sometimes be a challenge, you know. So it's good that you found value in Sarah's topic. We thought going in that was going to be an amazing topic and that we were really, pleased to see it work out that way. But that's just that comment is on a topic that is of great interest to us because we talk about keynotes all the time. You know, what will a lot of people, what will be of interest and applicable to our very wide, varied audience? And that leads, as you might imagine, to really deep, long, extended discussions and in some cases, debate and in some cases, disagreement. So it's really, really interesting. So I'm really glad you found value in that one.
And I also recall that you don't have like most conferences will have like a long speaker. So somebody's talking for 45 minutes or so, and then maybe a few short sessions, or maybe just that's the only thing in the morning. As I recall, it was like four or five sort of small keynotes every day. Is that right?
That it is. Yeah. We'll do our keynote block. We'll have four or five keynote speakers. Yeah. And we generally structure them. I'll use the analogy TED Talks. TED, I know, are like 18 or 19 minute long talks. Ours yep. are 10 to 12 minutes, generally speaking. You can say a lot in 10, 12, 15 minutes. You know, anybody that's done any public speaking, there are some topics that are difficult to explain in 10, 12 minutes, more complex, more nuanced topics. But the majority of them, you can say a lot in just 10 to 15 minutes. And that's our keynote speakers have always done a really great job. They have really said a lot. They've packed a lot into those 10 or 15 minutes. And, our attendees get to hear from, you know, four to five, you know, people doing extremely interesting things within just, you know, an hour to an hour and a half block of time. So that's been well received. It kind of keeps things moving too. You know, it gives the attendees some variety within that block. You know, back in the early days, going back a long, long way, 10 years ago, we would do the extended keynote talks, the 45-minute keynote talks. And we learned very, very early on that for a keynote, for a big audience, a 45-minute talk, unless, just a select few speakers can hold the attention of a big audience for that long a period of time, and then maybe it's a fireside chat, or maybe they're being interviewed by someone. Generally speaking, we have found that doesn't work so well, not with our format. Mm-hmm. So that's one reason why we transitioned a long time ago to again, multiple talks within that keynote block and limiting those to 10, 12 to 15 minutes. That just seems to work really well.
Yes, and you can hear a lot in 10 to 12 to 15 minutes. You can also hear a lot in an hour, like this show has already been. We're almost out of time. Is there anything else Sorry?
Yeah. I said, you're kidding. An hour has gone by? Wow.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Doesn't it go by so quickly? Oh, it's amazing.
It is.
So we're almost out of time. We're almost out of time. Is there anything we missed asking you today that you want to make sure our audience is aware of before we have to let you go?
No, I don't. Well, one, Randall, thank you so much for having me on. Simon, thank you for the questions. These were interesting questions, but you know, putting on events there's a lot that goes into this. This goes deep. This, you know, if you really put a lot of thought into an event, there are a million different ways you can do it. It's sort of like chess, you know, that's the analogy that I often use. After the first three or four moves, the number of options is almost infinite. with conferences after the first two or three moves, the ways that you can structure an event are almost infinite. So I hope I never lose it, like some people that have played mm-hmm. chess have. I hope I never get lost in the endless possibilities. But all that said, I really have enjoyed the questions because conference organizing goes deep. These are deep questions, many different directions. So thank you for having me on. Thank you for the nature mm-hmm. of the questions. And really just I would encourage people to at least give us a shot, you know, to go to allthingsopen.org, check out the conference. We really do things a little bit differently. That's intentional. You know, you'll notice we get some things wrong. We don't do things perfectly, but we have been at this a while and we've, you know, learned a lot of lessons. We have, you know, the scars to prove it, so to speak. So I think that people will really enjoy the show. We really do try to focus on the people because, Randall, at the end of the day, it's people that make technology possible. So, you know, hosting an event that only focuses on the technology side has never really made a lot of sense to me. We really try to focus on the people and make them the focus as well. So it's a very people-focused event, a lot of networking opportunities, a lot of interaction opportunities and engagement opportunities. I just think you'll leave having met a lot of new people that you did not know what, you know, before arriving. And then you'll also learn a lot too. We really do try to choose topics that are going to educate the attendee, technology, methodology, and then just other topics, you know, that are maybe distantly related or somewhat related to those two topics, like the ones that we discussed previously. So you'll really learn a lot as well. And then, you know, too, final thing, if anyone has any recommendations, I mean, if there are better ways to host conferences or maybe something we haven't thought of, I'm all ears. Our team is all ears. I mean, again, I admire anyone that does this. Any company or individual that does events, I admire them because it's not an easy thing to do. You can get lost in the possibilities. So if someone has found a better way of doing things than what we're currently doing it, I would love to hear from you. By all means, reach out, make a suggestion or on any topic, whether it be CFPs, whether it be the way we handle sponsors or just structure the event or topic or, you know, track topics or session titles or anything. We want to get better. We want to deliver more value for sure. So by all means.
Well, Todd, I want to thank you for coming on the show this time again and being very insightful as you always are. And I'll be seeing you in October in Raleigh.
Randall, thank you. Simon, thank you. Thank you again for the questions. Wonderful questions.
Awesome. That was Todd Lewis, the chief poobah of allthingsopen.org. Hope he doesn't take offense at me calling him that. Simon, what do you think?
It's really quite fascinating because, you know, from obviously I've only read the website and heard the discussion. It sounds a lot like an amalgam of elements from all the community events I've ever been to. So FrostCon in Germany, for example, puts all its exhibitors in the hallways and in the public space that everyone has to walk through. So does FOSDEM in Brussels do that. That's kind of a community way of doing things. And the low price and the focus on education rather than commercial promotion, those all have got a kind of a community feel to them. So fascinating event. I really would quite like to go. Whether I can afford to spend $1,000 on a ticket to Raleigh to go is another question. But with all that money I'd be saving on the ticket, I suppose it's cheaper than going to OSCON in Portland.
Yeah, I was going to say OSCON for a typical attendee is something like $1,500 now, right? I don't know. I never paid.
I wouldn't even want to begin to guess what it costs, honestly, Randall. I've been getting a free ticket as a member of the program committee for quite a few years now, and I've lost track of what it costs, but I know it's a four-figure number.
Wow, yeah, I'm sure it is. And I'm just thinking, as he was talking about community conferences, and you were talking about that, I'm at the Pearl Conference, which, in fact, is a super cheap conference to attend, and they put the exhibitors out in the hallway. So maybe that's a common litmus test. I should never go to an event that doesn't have the vendors in the hallway anymore. Yes, that would be hard to keep up, I guess, maybe because there's not that many. But yeah, and I haven't paid for a conference in years. And so I really don't know what things cost anymore. But I know that's a sensitive issue for some people. So that's kind of fun. Scale has an exhibit hall. But it's more volunteer run and it's fairly cheap to attend. So that's pretty good. All right. We're way over time. So I got to get going here. Upcoming guests. I only have four on the books right now. I got to get some more to fill in some of the slots. OPSI is coming up next week. They're an open source client management system to manage heterogeneous environments. and enables the deployment and configuration from OSs and software on Windows and Linux computers. CX after that, for those of you looking for blockchain, we've got a blockchain show coming up.
Hooray!
CX is a general purpose. Yay! It's a general purpose interpreted and compiled programming language. And without reading the rest of the sentences there, basically it's targeting the Ethereum blockchain contract. So that's basically what it's primarily designed for. So it's coming up two shows from now. Micronaut is a modern JVM-based full-stack framework for building modular, easily testable microservices and serverless applications. And then just to have two or three shows that use the word serverless, that's probably going to be our theme for the month. Serverless framework, that's their name. Now they enable easy deploy for serverless apps. So that's coming up in a while. I'm about to open up, I think, July. No, those are July. I'm about to open up August so we can start filling in some more slots. I've got a bunch of people on the short list. I've got some people here from the Pearl Conference. I'll clearly have a bunch of people from All Things Open because that's such a rich source for possible guests. I mean, every keynote there, all the rooms that I went to, and I got a bunch of people from that show last time I was there, so it makes it justified for me to put some money and time into that. Anyway, that's what we got on the upcoming list. Twitch.tv/floss is the homepage for this show. I highly recommend you check that out because linked from there is the big spreadsheet that talks about who we've got coming up and who we're also talking to already. I love other suggestions. Please tell the project leader or the community coordinator to email me, Merlin@stonehenge.com. My email address is on that page. And if I write it down, just go to remember twit.tv/floss. It's the only thing you have to remember. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays at live.twit.tv. The chat room there, I don't think we took any questions from chat room this time. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Twitter, and hopefully something like Medium coming up soon. I've got to figure out the right blogging platform that multiple people can share, because I always like to have my co-host be able to post articles. You can follow me at Merlin on Twitter, Merlyn. I am at the Pearl Conference. I am at the conference in Pittsburgh. I will be at OSCON in mid-July in my hometown of Portland. I've been accepted to be a speaker and a guest speaker and a panelist at DragonCon in Atlanta, Labor Day weekend. I'm actually giving a long Flutter talk again. I'm actually building a live Flutter application and run it on iOS, Android, a Mac desktop, and in a web browser, hello English. And so it's going to be really fun. And I will be, as I told Todd a moment ago, I will be at All Things Open in mid-October and in Raleigh, North Carolina. So that's my upcoming places I will be at. Simon, do you have anything to plug?
I would like everybody in the UK to immediately go and buy a ticket for OrgCon. That's the Open Rights Group conference. We have Edward Snowden keynoting the conference. We have an amazing lineup of people. The tickets are not at all expensive, and you can get them from the openrightsgroup.org website. And you probably ought to go fairly soon and get some before we sell out. That conference is on the 13th of July, and I expect to be there. And then I may well find myself at OSCON. So if you would like to meet me at OSCON, do please drop me a line and we can try and set up a meeting. And then the other thing I'd like you to all rush out and buy a ticket to is the conference that Dan and I put on in October called OG Camp. That's the 19th and 20th of October. And we just opened ticket sales for that. The early bird tickets are available at the remarkably low price of whatever you want to pay for them. We suggest at least £15 sterling. So do please come along for that weekend, 19th and 20th of October. Apart from that, you'll find me at Webmink on Twitter. You'll find the stuff that I write about at meshedinsights.com. That's the URL on the screen for the people who are watching the video feed. And I welcome your support through Patreon. You'll find me on patreon.com/webmink. Back to you, Randall.
Cool. I hope you get to come to OSCON because I don't have a guest yet, and you're pretty good at hunting those down. So, and you can certainly co-host with me, obviously, there. That would make sense if you're there. If you're not there, then I have to find another co-host, and I have to find a guest somehow before then, which would be interesting. I'm going to write the press contact there and see if there's any announcements going to be made. That's always a good way to do that. Anyway, we're way over. I apologize for that, but this show is just so interesting. I mean, and Todd had some really great answers to some really interesting questions, so I really appreciate that. So with that in mind, thank you, Simon, once again, and we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.